This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's 12:03 on a snowy Thursday afternoon, November 21st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. Pour yourself an eggnog and listen to the Noon Business Hour. Teenagers are citing rising costs as a worry as they go about their holiday shopping. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the Index of Leading Indicators is out today, along with data on home sales and jobless claims. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at AndrewBush.com. Andy, thank you for joining us today. Let's talk about the Index of Leading Economic Indicators, and it seems to tell the same story, and that is a slow but steady growth.
Yeah, this is an indicator that I think we kind of have to ignore. And the reason why I say that, Rob, is because it contains the yield curve in it. And the yield curve doesn't tell us anything about the economy anymore because the Federal Reserve manipulates the yield curve. In other words, they force down the long end of the curve by buying $5 trillion worth of securities. This thing has not told us what's going on since COVID. And until that gets fixed within the index, it really doesn't help much. It declined for 5 months in a row, but we've been growing. And we were growing in the fourth quarter at 2.6% right now. So I just discount this thing.
Yeah, it feels like it's the cliche in sports. You got to throw out the record books when two teams get together. And it feels like the Great Recession recovery and then the recession coming out of the COVID economic shutdown, maybe some statistics, as you point out, don't have the same utility that they once had.
Yes, you're being kind. Yeah, when it comes to this one, put this one aside. Now, I'm sure you're going to want me to talk about home sales because those things surged, which is to some extent great news. But we need a lot more homes built in the United States. The sales of the previously owned homes were up 3.4% in September, but that's when mortgage rates dropped significantly and they're back up. So I'm not sure we're going to get the same bounce in October, and home prices continue to go up. So this is the problem overall, Rob. As you know, home prices have not budged. They just keep pushing higher because the demand's there, because there's just not enough of these things being built. Essentially, since the global financial crisis back in 2007-08, we've underbuilt by 500,000 homes per year over like 14 years. So that's where we're at when it comes to new home sales.
Now, this is an interesting economic experiment that we're about to enter into, and that is we have a second non-consecutive Trump administration that will come in the month of January, and you get to see how the second Trump administration operates an economy under a very different set of conditions compared to the ones they were inheriting in 2016. And that is you had a low interest rate economy. You had a 10-year yield that was non-existent back in 2017. You have quantitative easing. And now you have an economy that's at an inflection point. So what are some of the pressures that the Trump economic team will be operating under when they take office in January?
Well, the first one's going to be stubborn inflation. And if President-elect Trump follows through on that 20% tariff on all goods being imported in the United States, you're going to have a one-time shock to that. So you're going to jump up significantly from there. The other risk is if they're serious about deporting 9 million people that came into the country or thereabouts, you're going to see spikes in certain food products for sure, because 40% of the products that are picked and you know, got off the farms come from itinerant workers or people coming across the border. So you're going to have a shock to the system on those two things. It's going to take a little while for that to happen as far as the border stuff goes, but the tariffs can happen right away. So that's going to be a challenge. And I think overall that the tax cuts that they want to do, corporate tax cuts, will certainly boost the stock market. They're already anticipating that. That'll be great. But the big problem, Rob, is going to be if they engage in all of the things that they talked about during the election, you're looking at a massive increase in the budget deficit. And that means interest rates are going to keep going up. And that means homeowners or people that want to buy houses are going to see those costs go up as well. And that market will continue to soften.
Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer for the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you for joining us today.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A survey finds teenagers are concerned that high prices will put a crimp into their holiday shopping. Let's find some ways to help them. We welcome in Jennifer Waters, Chicago-based business reporter. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. And one of the highlights of the teenage calendar is when the parents allow them to go to the mall and do their holiday shopping so you don't see what they're getting for you. And it sounds like the teenagers have something in common with their parents these days, and that is they're really complaining about higher prices.
Yeah, hello, Rob. Yes, of course they are. And aren't we all complaining about higher prices? They're everywhere. And, you know, we already know that there's going to be a lot more spending this year, according to the National Retail Federation. They're looking at spending up between 2.5 and 3.5 from last year, which is up, you know, that's $979.5 billion and $989 billion. That's a lot of money. But we don't know if that's just because people are going to be going out there and spending it, or because, you know, prices are just higher. And obviously teens are feeling this. So I say it's a teaching moment for many parents. I mean, you have young kids. This is a good teaching moment for you. I know when I was a kid, this was my, you know, my parents telling us, you know, you got to go out and, you know, make some money, put a list together, figure out who you're buying from, make sure you have the money. If you have a job, see if you can take some extra shifts. You know, if not, today is a prime example of an earning potential day. We could go out and shovel snow. I don't know why kids don't do that anymore, but things like that that you can do, and then just help, you know, help your kids get money management skills, you know, between the budget and the savings and the choices and where they can go. Teach them the bane and the glory on Black Friday, you know, the going comparison shopping, getting coupons, using gift certificates, making gifts, not necessarily going out and buying things, making gifts, which, or giving the gift of time, you know, I'll do this for you, or I'll spend time with you doing that.
I was going to say, the oldest, she's 11, and she's already very proud of her coupon and deal snooping skills. So she's already working on that. But the other lesson, and you bring this up, is that just getting something to get something, that's you don't need to do that. You know, spending money just for the sake of spending money, or buying a stuff just for the sake of buying stuff, is not what good gifts are made of.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's all in the thought, right, is what the gifts are about. But that's part of the whole thing of, like, teaching them to go out shopping with a plan. Okay, who are you buying for? What do you think they really need or want or should be reading or whatever? And then figure out how you can get that and how you can get it, whether you're comparison shopping or, you know, shopping, you know, big sales, or shopping with coupons and stuff. That's the kind of thing that I think is really important at this time of year. And it's such a great opportunity to teach your children money management skills.
Jennifer Waters, Chicago-based business reporter. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, McDonald's goes full steam ahead with its value deals.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
McDonald's is counting on its value menu and the return of the McRib to drive sales. We welcome in R.J. Hadaby, head of analytical research at the Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. R.J., thank you for joining us today. And when it comes to McDonald's sales, did the E. coli outbreak that was tied to those onions on Quarter Pounders a couple of weeks ago, did that meaningfully impact McDonald's sales, and are these deals a response to them?
Yeah, in response to your first question, we certainly saw an impact from E. coli, particularly in the states that were most impacted, including Colorado. Overall, on a nationwide basis, we saw about a 8% dip in visitation trends, at least initially. That got about as bad as about 10% that first week that we saw the E. coli announcement. But it started to normalize. Visitation trends are still down on a year-over-year basis. But, we've certainly seen worse in the fast casual and QSR space. Go back to, Chipotle in 2015, which saw even more severe declines. So I think McDonald's getting out in front of it, talking about the source of the issue and what they were going to do to remedy, I think certainly helped in this case. But to answer your second question, I do think some of the announcements towards a McValue menu that we're going to see in 2025, as well as the always popular McRib launch, I think some of these promotions are in response and hopefully can inverse some of the negative traffic patterns that we started to see the last couple of weeks.
Now, what is the methodology of when and how McDonald's rolls out the McRib and pulls it back? Because it's an event. They market it. They want you to believe that when they pull it from the menu, it's never coming back. So how does McDonald's plan the McRib rollout when it happens?
Yeah, I think every year they take new factors into consideration, new data points that look at it. I've seen data about McRib being much more popular in the Midwest states than it is the coast. But I think, as we've talked about several times before this year, I think there may be this nostalgia play. And we've seen a number of innovative approaches to marketing. And I think that's going to be the interesting part about this offering, not just the McRib and having it come back nationwide, but also offering an opportunity to get a jug of McRib sauce, which certainly will be popular. I think that is an interesting approach that we haven't seen from McDonald's before. But I think there's just a lot of things that go into it. And I think this year we're kind of veering into nostalgia territory, as well as McDonald's keeping up with some of the more innovative marketing approaches that you and I have talked about many times this year.
Now, very quickly, we do want to ask you about the jug of McRib sauce, which can be purchased at wholelottermcribsauce.com for $20 starting on November 25th. And that is fast food restaurants do market their sauces to customers. And how prevalent of a trend is this? Because my youngest daughter is a big Cane's Chicken fan. And you can go buy Cane's Chicken sauce by the quart at a franchise location. So clearly, McDonald's is not the first to this game with the McRib sauce.
No, they're not. And I'm chuckling because I have a daughter in the same boat here. So I'll pick you up on going and getting the sauce at a franchisee location. But it is starting to be a movement across the space. We're starting to see that those QSR brands that have really kind of risen above the rest have an opportunity to sell the sauces directly to consumers. And there really is something of a sauce movement going on in the space, Raising Cane's being one, but certainly Chick-fil-A, Panera with some of their dressings. There are a number of chains that have embraced this, and we're really starting to see more of this across not only restaurants, but also in the grocery world, where a lot of those are carrying QSR brands now at this point. So interesting to see. I think we're kind of in a moment with a lot of these brands and some of the innovations they're having in the sauce. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes in the years to come.
R.J. Hadaby, thank you for joining.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us this afternoon.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The first snow of the season is making it a rough go for drivers. We'll get a live update from Neil Fiorito on the Traffic Center. Illinois' highest court issues a major decision in the case involving actor Jussie Smollett, and one name under consideration for President-elect Trump's cabinet withdraws his nomination. It's Technology Thursday. AI can be a big help as you plan your next trip, and it's important for parents to have a talk with their children before giving them a cell phone. Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 589 points, NASDAQ up 42, and the S&P 500 is up 41, 33 degrees. Right now in Chicago with snow, the snow continues to fall. It's causing lots of problems for drivers on the expressways, tollways, and off the expressway system. Let's welcome in the hardest working man in show business, especially for today, Neil Fiorito in the Traffic Center.
Thank you, Rob. Yeah, it's been a busy one for sure. It's been a while since we dealt with this. The winter weather making its way through. Time's tough really all around, especially on some of the ramps across town. The Stevenson inbound stopped with two semis that couldn't make the incline of the ramp. Too slick to the Dan Ryan, couldn't get to that ramp. We've seen these issues on several roadways today. Remember, ramps, bridges, overpasses, super slick. Leave early today or just stay home. More traffic coming up at 12:38. Neil Fiorito, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
The Illinois Supreme Court has overturned actor Jussie Smollett's conviction on charges that he staged a racist and homophobic attack in 2019, then lied about the alleged incident to Chicago police. The court agreed with lawyers for Smollett, who argued that a special prosecutor should not have been allowed to intervene after a plea deal had been agreed to. Meanwhile, former Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz has withdrawn his name from consideration to serve as Attorney General for the incoming Trump administration. Gaetz has been the subject of rumors in an ethics investigation into alleged participation in underage sex parties and sex trafficking rings. He's denied any wrongdoing. It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. And how do we make a head or tails out of yesterday's NVIDIA third quarter report?
Well, I would say the report was nothing short of spectacular. When you're able to beat on the revenue line by $2.5 billion after having guided higher by $2 billion in the previous quarter, you're certainly selling a lot of chips, right? And what's amazing about the quarter two is they beat on the earnings line handedly. And the only disappointment likely was a bit of the guide forward. Now, understanding that NVIDIA is in the middle of a transition from the Hopper or the H200 to the Blackwell chip, and Blackwell didn't really make up any part of the last quarter and will likely be baked into the next quarter. It's not surprising when you go through that transition that there's going to be some slippage in your forward guidance, at least for the first quarter of production and ramp out. But by the end of the next two quarters, we'll likely see a much larger participation of Blackwell, the continued revenue growth, continued earnings growth, and ultra-high gross margins at 75%. So I think, you know, great expectations certainly built into this name, up, you know, close to 200% on a year-to-date basis as they were reporting, and clearly, you know, a cadence of raising your guidance by a couple of billion dollars a quarter for the last six quarters just wasn't sustainable for this particular quarter, and I think that's where there might have been a modicum of disappointment.
And then elsewhere in the technology space, Alphabet, the former Google, their share slumping 6% because of antitrust fears that the government will make them divest their Chrome browser. If you make any sweeping announcements about antitrust enforcement at this stage of the game, if you're Google or anybody else, do you just sit there and wait things out and knowing you're going to get a much more fair hearing from the next administration?
Yeah, it's likely. It's also something that Alphabet has already said they're going to appeal. That appeal process is very lengthy. Just the first round of appeals would likely take about a year. And if failing that, you take it to another level and eventually the Supreme Court if it goes that far. So we're talking about something that may come about in 3 years. And think about it with the pace of change in technology. How important is Chrome for search going to be 3 years from now with all the new innovations we're getting from the likes of artificial intelligence? So, yeah, I think this, you know, right now this was as expected. This is, you know, the here and now stocks at about 5% on this, but expect this to be a long, drawn-out battle, and eventually we'll get some resolution, but that's not going to be this year's business.
And then cryptocurrency, is Bitcoin especially getting close to the $100,000 point, crossing the $98,000 threshold. And there are a number of angles in which to attack the cryptocurrency space. I mean, either you're a trader and you really know the ins and outs of cryptocurrency, or for those of us who are civilians, Art, how many cryptocurrency Super Bowl commercials am I going to see come February, thanks to this bubble in the crypto space?
Yeah, I would tell you it is reminiscent of some of the Super Bowl commercials we saw back in 99 and 2000, if you recall. So it's, to the extent, you bring up a very good point. I think the surge in crypto of late certainly is tied to the new administration shining a brighter and perhaps a more friendly light on cryptocurrencies writ large, and whether that's on a regulatory front or just in its overall use. But the early adoption, the front end of this year, where we went from about 40 to about 60,000, that move was largely driven by the fact that we have ETFs, so that civilians like you and I can at least have easy access to this, not have to have some cold storage or a wallet, or you know, go through any of the fancy crypto exchanges. We can just go right ahead and go to our brokerage account and buy the ETF. So there's been a couple of things that have lifted the cryptocurrency this year, and certainly momentum is driving a lot of people into it. It's getting way more headlines than you would expect, and we'll see what happens after it bounces off that 100,000 and does one of its usual 20 to 50% downdrafts.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Thank you for joining us today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and artificial intelligence can be a very useful tool as you plan a trip. We're joined by Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group and Professor of Advanced Media in Residence at the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. Shelley, thank you for joining us today. In a practical sense, if you turn to ChatGPT or its equivalents, how can it help you plan a vacation?
You know, it's one of the first things everybody does with ChatGPT. You say, I'm going to Paris for 4 days. What should I pack? And it'll probably ask you what time of year you're going. So you tell it, and you tell it what kind of events you're going to go to, and it literally will make you a packing list. It's actually really funny. You could also say things like, you know, I'm going to this particular city in this particular part of the world. What medicines should I bring with me that are hard to find there? You can literally ask ChatGPT anything about your trip, best tourist sites, best non-tourist sites, restaurants where locals eat. And especially now with ChatGPT's new search feature, if you have a paid version of ChatGPT, you can use the search feature. It's actually an interesting combination of Google and ChatGPT. You get the value of search and summaries, so you don't have to go looking as hard as you ordinarily would. Now, one big caveat, Rob, you can't believe everything you read.
No, I don't believe it.
Just saying.
Now, Shelley, not to sound like a total Luddite, but part of the fun of vacation planning and the things that made the late Anthony Bourdain and Rick Steves and other travel planners, professional travelers, very wealthy people, was the idea that you were getting some sort of insider knowledge from an experienced globetrotter. It wasn't just enough to look in a book and find where the Snake Venom Cafe is in a particular part of the world. You had to hear it from somebody who was knowledgeable, and there's a big cool story involved in that. Where is the fun of planning a vacation? Where are the insider stories when you turn to ChatGPT?
So, as you know, I travel extensively for business. We're talking millions of miles in my career. And there's a difference between being a traveler and a tourist. And there's a difference between being on vacation and wanting the joy of discovery and getting some insider knowledge and just getting the hard knowledge or details you need immediately for the things you need, you need knowledge about. I would argue that you can actually do something really fun with ChatGPT. You can say, or any of these, right, Claude or any of them, but especially ChatGPT or Perplexity, because both of these do have search features. You can say, you're acting as Anthony Bourdain. You're acting as an expert traveler. You're acting as a tourist who loves this. You literally should, and every time you prompt a large language model, tell it who it's acting as. You're acting as me, and you can tell them about yourself. You're acting as Anthony Bourdain, who already knows. You're acting as an experienced traveler. Then you say, well, the target is, the target audience is me. I'm a person, or we're going on a family vacation. So you're very clear with the model what its goals are. And then it's really important to be super honest about what it is you want it to tell you. I am looking for the best restaurants. I'm looking, and what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. I'm looking for restaurants where I can have a great meal for under $25 a person. That is something it can deal with. So the more accurate your queries are, the better the results are going to be. You can't just say, I'm going to France, what do I do? Because it doesn't know. So you have to be very accurate with your prompt. And here's the super prompt for the end. And for anybody who wants to know how to be the world's foremost expert in ChatGPT or any large language model, the last thing you write in your prompt is, please ask me clarifying questions until you are 95% sure you can accomplish the task I have given you. And you keep writing that. And what the model will do is it will play 20 questions with you until it is clear about what you want, and then it will serve you best. And if you do that, you're always going to get a good result out of any large language model.
And the next time you are bragging about your travelogue, you can just say, look, I went to the best snake venom cafe, and I have to thank ChatGPT for the tip. Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group and Professor of Advanced Media in Residence at the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, preparing children for the responsibility of having a phone.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Kids may find a phone under the Christmas tree this year, but that gift comes with concern and responsibility. Let's bring in Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder and editor-in-chief of Techish.com based in San Francisco. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. And if you give your kids a piece of technology, it's always a good idea to lay out the rules of the road, what's expected of you, acceptable use times, and things like that. But giving it as a surprise is a bit of a tricky situation, Jennifer, because if you have that talk about technology now, you're going to blow the surprise. And if you have that talk about technology when they're in the euphoria of receiving the gift, the message is not going to be received. So what can you do as a parent if you are giving your kids tech this holiday season and it may be their first piece of technology?
One of the biggest things you can do right now, you should be doing right now, is talking to them about technology. There shouldn't be, you know, you can keep the surprise, you know, just don't think you're quite ready. We're going to wait a little while longer. And then surprise, it's here. But make sure, I mean, starting really in toddlerhood now, you have to be setting up rules and guardrails around technology. It's just the world we live in. You know, when I was growing up, it was, you know, don't talk to strangers or don't go hitchhiking, get in a strange van. It's the same thing, but with technology now. And then once they do get that surprise, they need to sign that contract. You know, this rule shouldn't be a surprise to them come opening that new smartphone on Christmas or around the holidays.
When it comes to technology, Jennifer, and very quickly here, what's the bigger area of concern? Is it online safety and making sure you're not delivering any compromising information that could threaten your personal information or your safety? Or is it addiction, making sure there are guardrails in place that your child is not staring at their phone or their device for hours on end?
It's both, and it's equal parts both. A lot of information out there saying wait to give your child a smartphone until they're 14. Don't let them on social media until they're 16. Middle school is the worst time. There's a ton of bullying out there. I'm addicted to my smartphone. I don't know how a young brain that can't fight that addiction as well as I can is going to get past that. Too many problems. Delay as long as you can. Once you do buy that phone, set up parental controls. You can do it really easily on an Apple phone. You can do it fairly easily on most Android phones. Consider Bark, Pinwheel, one of those other phones. Consider a watch at first. Use training wheels and teach them the right way to interact with this technology.
Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder, editor-in-chief of Techish.com in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us today.